Those are the three lines in the middle. I don't use Fibonacci very often for price extensions, for looking at new highs or new lows. I use it after a trend completes and looking at the pullbacks, trying to figure out where support is, where it's going to bounce, where it's going to fail, where the trend has changed, that kind of thing. So you have a low and you have a high. Don't ask me why I use the second bottom, but I do on this. You have a low made in October, and the trend completes up there in November. You have an extension, a price. At that point, I apply Fibonacci to it and try to find out where it's going next. That's part of being a swing trader. I like the middle of the market more than I like new highs or new lows. I like working the middle of the market because there's a lot more information there. When something goes and breaks to a new high, I don't know how high it's going to go. I don't know when the trend's going to be over. And if I enter a trade, I don't know when I'm wrong because it's in a new high. I have no, there's nothing in the landscape to tell me what it's supposed to do, and I get real confused. I get real confused. I didn't make a lot of money between November and March. Almost all the money I made this year is between March and now. That's me personally. That's one of my weaknesses, is trading momentum markets, because I get confused. I don't know what to do next. When something closes at its high one day at a new high, you can't really use a classic thing of, well, you know, you're supposed to buy a closing high at a new high because the next day it's going to gap up, because it doesn't happen anymore with regularity. Because everybody knows what the market's supposed to do these days, and that common knowledge has really turned things upside down. And just one more comment before we move on to the next slide about common knowledge. I can't stand in front of you, and I don't think anybody can stand in front of you now and take your attention up with standard basic technical analysis principles. Standard TA is pure commodity these days. You go back 5 years ago, the group of folks, 5, 10 years ago, the group of folks who applied technical analysis was very narrow compared to the broad market. It was very narrow, and that's why it worked so well, because it was a minority. It was a minority. Number one, you didn't have the access to the charts the way you did today. Number two, it was poo-pooed by the institutions as being witchcraft. The price of admission was very high, and most people were investors. They didn't need their charts. They looked, maybe they had their value line chart, you know, their 5-year value line graph. But look what's happened to technical analysis in the past 5 years with the internet, with the collapse of the middleman, the collapse of costs. Everybody's a technician now. Everybody knows highs. Everybody knows lows. Everybody can see triangles. Everybody can see double tops and double bottoms. And because everybody can do it, it doesn't work as well. It doesn't work the same way as it used to work. As soon as something becomes part of the common knowledge, it loses its ability to function in the way that is commonly accepted. It's the market opportunity runs on inefficiency. TA exposes inefficiency so that traders can make trades. TA itself is now part of the common knowledge, and you have to start with the basic grounding of TA and then flip it upside down and drive yourself crazy until you can take a step back and find out what everybody else is doing with the TA so you could do something different. Now, I don't know if that sounds screwy. Yeah?
With all that TA up there, how did you compare that yesterday to what the market was doing? The Intel crash. Put a NASDAQ chart as that's a NASDAQ stock.
Oh, okay. Well, I have an answer for your specific question, I think. If you take a look at the April 4th bar on NASDAQ, everything that's happened since April 4th is in relationship to that single price bar. That was the 600-point spread day. We opened at 4,200, dropped down to 3,600, closed around 4,100. Everything that's taken place since then is in relationship to that single day's event. And yesterday, guess what? NASDAQ opened right at the bottom of that bar. Something like the last 85 trading days, it's traded within the range of that single bar. So there was something in the landscape, to answer your question, there was something in the landscape on NASDAQ that gave you information that you at least could take and make a reasoned judgment as to what might happen that day, technically. Okay? Now, the point of this graph here, the point of the chart here is we're going to discover this isn't so complicated because we're not going to look at the whole thing. We're going to train the eyes to find the intersecting points. That's the only parts that matter are where all this stuff intersects, crisscrosses at a single price level. That's the important part. We call that cross-verification. We'll talk about that more, where you see the same thing two or three or four or five different ways in the market. And that's telling you that's a signal. That's not noise. This is all noise. If you look at it, just in a blur, it's all noise. There's just tons of information. How do you decide what's important? But you'll be able to use your ability to look at those points where these indicators all crisscross, where a pullback hits a moving average, which hits a Fibonacci retracement, which enters a gap, all at exactly the same price point. And you often using that, if you're skilled, could pick up reversals within two or three ticks. And it's not complicated as we break it down. Let's flip. The lower pain indicators. There's lots of good ways to use them, and I think people get confused by the lower pain. Lower pain, again, serves a specific purpose to support the upper pain. It's got to be tuned to your holding period. I use some real simple tools in the lower pain. I use a volume bar, you know, a histogram, red for up, black for down, even though I think it's blue for red for down and blue for up on this one. The histogram gives you just about everything you need to know about volume, about crowd participation, what's important, what's not important. And either at RSI or stochastics, I like RSI in daily charts, and I use stochastics on intraday charts, to find the swing of the market, to find the cycles in the market. On intraday charts, I'll use it to assist timing, but it's so easy to get fooled by that stuff. So easy to get fooled. Let's flip. We're talking about finding price convergence, finding where points intersect. Now, here's a Fibonacci grid put over a Netscape trend. A Netscape trend. How do we know it's a trend? That requires, how do we know where to put the points? How do we know the top is over? Well, if I was trading this, I would originally have the top of my grid probably to that first high until that second high appeared in reverse. A little bit more noise in the system, but it wouldn't have thrown things off that much. Sometimes you're going to put the lower grid. You're looking for a double bottom. I mean, that's where you put the if it's a uptrend, you're looking for a double bottom. Most of the time, the second bottom works better with Fibonacci than the first bottom does. It has something to do with, he's going to say that word, Elliott wave theory. We're not here to talk about Elliott wave, but seat of the pants Elliott wave is a great tool. And I especially like it because nobody likes it these days. It's not popular. But seat of the pants Elliott waves are a very interesting tool to use. Don't become a nut about it, but it's very interesting to use. But looking at the charting landscape and seeing different points and watch how they confirm. Gaps are one of the most important things that you'll ever see in a price chart. We talked about 3D charting and how you want to look at three time dimensions. Gaps cut through all of them. Logic. Gaps take place. If a gap takes place on a monthly chart, it's taking place on the weekly, it's taking place on the daily, it's taking place on the 60-minute. Gaps are extremely important. Probably they are the most important single bar events that take place. Most important interaction with gaps are not when they occur, but it's after they occur when price starts to move back into them so you can make, where you have to make a decision of, is it going to fill the gap or not fill the gap? And classic TA is conditioned to tell you that gaps fill. Some do and some don't. The skill to learn is determining what kind of gap you're looking at. Some gaps you want to price pull back in that thing. Tremendous low risk opportunity. Price pulls back into a continuation gap. It's a tremendous opportunity because continuation gaps almost never get filled the first time price pulls back into them after a trend. In fact, that's exactly what happened here. That's a continuation. See where the gap occurred in relation to the Fibonacci? It occurred exactly right through that 50% point. See how that gap cuts right through that? What, about 54? Classic gap theory, Edwards and McGee, I suppose it went back even further than that. I don't think they invented it. But classic gap theory says that, or determines that, there's three kinds of gaps they recognize. One when a stock breaks out or breaks down. One when the crowd gets carried away, continuation gap or runaway gap, right at the middle of the trend. Perfection on this chart, and really perfection most of the time. It's really amazing. And then an exhaustion gap when the crowd blows itself out on high volume. Was your hand up? Yeah, go ahead.
At the point of that gap, how would you determine if it was a continuation or an exhaustion?
When the gap itself takes place, you don't even worry about it. Well, you're waiting until the trend completes. Remember, we're talking about working within a pullbacks to trends. Okay? There are ways by its behavior after that bar. On the day of it, I think most of us get conditioned when there's a gap to feel like we had to do something right then and there. But as I'm talking about, a lot of your opportunity with gaps come sometimes weeks later, months later, even years later, when price returns to that point. And it's all about predictability. You know, you want to make successful trades. You want to have a high percentage of winning trades. Whatever you see in the charting landscape, that's going to raise the probability of something happening. In other words, raises the probability of a reversal taking place, starts to raise the opportunity for you. And that's why you get something like a momentum market again, where price goes up and it's up 10 points, 12 points for the day. How do you know it's going to go up 15 points, 20 points for the day? But when price pulls back into this landscape, I call it a trend mirror. It's a trend mirror. A trend takes place, price starts to pull back, and as it pulls back, there's clearly marked features on the landscape that you could use, the simplest being support resistance, right? It pulls back to an old high to find some support. But it's a little bit more subtle than that. When you're able to recognize the features of the charting landscape, you can pinpoint reversals very, very closely. You may not be able to pinpoint the extent and duration of the reversal, but it gets you into the position, into a profit quickly, and then you have to apply risk management because there are no certainties in this world. But it gets you into a profit fairly quickly. Let's flip. I think it was Daryl Guppy. I don't know if any of you know who Daryl Guppy is. He's an Australian technical analyst, and he came up with a concept called moving average rainbows. And what he does is applies 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 moving averages to a single price chart. Then he looks at the fractal behavior of the price within those moving averages. There's really two pieces to moving average rainbows. I call them moving average ribbons. I actually started using them, and I thought it was my idea, and then I saw Daryl talking about it, and he had been talking about it for years. There's two aspects to it. How far price pulls back, does it always pull back to the 20 or the 50 or the 40 in a trend? If it does it several times, is it more likely to do it again? And the other one is, again, going back to pure pattern analysis, the ribbons create patterns as they twist. Look how this bear market's formed on Siena. Look how price starts to twist out from an uptrend. Everything's layered up from the short moving averages to the longer moving averages in the uptrend. As it starts to flip, they start to twist. The ribbon starts to twist. Finally, and it's not till about this point right in here, are they completely inverted? This shows the evolution from a bull market to a sideways market, to a bear market, and if you keep on going, I guess Siena did come back from 22, you know? Moving average ribbons is another piece that you put on top of your charting landscape in order to produce information. I think on that complex chart we looked at, we saw that ribbons were there. I use ribbons more for daily charts to scan, sort of mental scan type things. I do use three moving averages on my intraday charts. I use 5, 8, and 13 period moving averages. To me, that taps into very short-term cycles in the market. And I'd be glad to talk about settings with you if you want to anytime for daily and intraday and what my reasoning is behind them. If you have any interest in that, just let me know. Well, you know, not everybody's interested in individual settings for their, you know, for specific time frames. So we have so many different time frames. But I shorten up on my periods. For intraday charts, I use 5, 8, and 13, which some of you may realize is a Fibonacci set of numbers. I tripped over those a couple years ago, and as soon as I saw them, and they're encased in the Bollinger Band. It's a 13-period Bollinger Band. That's why the 13 is the longest moving average. It runs through it. You generally match that, two standard deviations. For my dailies, I use just 20-period Bollinger Bands, 20-day Bollinger Bands, like everybody else, because I want to see what everybody else is seeing. The classic moving averages for dailies are 20-day, 50-day, 200-day. The 200-day moving average, which is the 40-week moving average, is the classic definition of the barrier between a bull and a bear market. Very commonly accepted. Maybe this is a good point to talk about. We talked about the common knowledge. And do you set your indicators to what everybody else sets them to? Because you run the same risk as seeing what everybody else sees and acting the way they do and becoming the herd. If that makes any sense. In the linear, you know. Yeah. Well, thanks. You just made my point. Oh, it's exactly true. Exactly true. It's exactly true. But, you know, you even take it a step further. Staying ahead of the crowd is one strategy, but you have two other choices. You could step back behind the crowd, let them make the mistake, let them pay the price, and then step in there and pick up the pieces. Or you can just turn around and go the other way. Take the other side of the trade. And another skill to learn is when to do which. The one thing we should all agree on, that most of the time, we don't want to be the crowd. We don't want to be in the crowd. Perfect example of being in the crowd. The short-term trader, you're looking at a breakout point. The stock breaks out, jumps up 2 points. You don't want to buy the bar where it just did it. That you're the crowd. You see that time and sales go crazy, and you jump in behind them. I mean behind them, meaning you see it and you react, you're the crowd. And now what happens very often with that? You just find the exact reversal point and you don't know how you did it. The market sees you coming. Let me finish up here because we have about 5 minutes till the break, and I'll start up the second section again for any questions, okay? So I just want to get through this as we'll start an analysis in the next hour. So flip the slide. Another tool, parallel price channels, and it's real funny. Whenever I talk, I always get through about half of what I want to in any given section. It's such a pleasure to be able to talk for 3 or 4 hours because I might get through 75% of what I want to talk about. It's not a question of babbling. It's just every little piece seems to lead to some in 20 directions. Parallel price channels are more stable than trend lines. They require 4 points. Thanks. They require 4 points instead of 3 points. But the funny thing about parallel price channels is they're much more common than clean trend lines, which makes absolutely no sense. I think maybe why it's the case is because it's a Fibonacci thing again. I think it's a very stable structure. I think it's very hard to screw around, to mess around with parallel price channels. Parallel price channels often embed themselves with each other. We may have some graphics on this, but it's another tool of the landscape. Go ahead and flip. Bollinger Bands, we can flip. So we've hit some of these subjects already. Classic 62% retracements. Any trend can correct up to 62% and still remain intact. If a correction breaks the 62% retracement, the trend has ended. At that point, you expect it to complete 100% move back to the inception point, which in this case, if it broke this 62% retracement point right there, you expect it to come all the way back to 32. Another piece of this, and we'll talk about it, it's called a first rise, first failure situation. Something that's my way of defining whether a trend's intact or not. A stock will bounce at the 62%, and certainly did in this case. It's a great entry point when you have cross-verification, other ways of seeing the same market that tells you that 38 is a good entry point. Okay, how about 5 minutes, Michael? Break, you want it? Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I had one more point on that one. Okay. Fibonacci, and I don't know if Joe talked about this or not, one of the best ways to use Fibonacci is to find different segments of a trend and overlay them across each other, going back to this point of finding intersecting levels. All that this graph does is takes the uptrend and then takes the reversal and lays a Fibonacci grid across the uptrend and another one over the reversal at 62%, and uses that to find how that market's going to swing back and forth within that smaller time frame. Now, you may not find opportunity on the daily on Apple here, but this is a great tool to use in this particular case if you went down to a 60-minute to try to pinpoint reversals and short swings in the market. Another way to use multiple Fibonacci grids is for different thrusts within a given trend, where you have it go goes up, and we'll have some more examples. It goes up, pulls back, goes up again, and then it reverses, and you'll lay a Fibonacci grid over the real long trend. Then you'll come up and just lay another Fibonacci grid over the shorter trend. Maybe you'll even lay a third one over the last leg. And then if the points don't intersect, go on to the next one. You're looking for where all three line up at the same point. Maybe you have three trends, and they all point. One's at 38%, one's at 50%, and the other's at 60%, but they're all at the same price level. We're looking for the signal within the noise. Go ahead and flip. This is a depiction of what goes on internally within the market in terms of how trends develop. Trends never move in straight lines. They wiggle. They move in waves. For every force, for every reaction, there's an equal and opposite reaction. Prices go up, they pull back. Prices go up, they pull back. Eventually, they stop going up, they turn around, they go down. Momentum moves in a similar manner. Momentum thrusts, and there's a counter-reaction. Momentum thrusts, and there's a counter-reaction. As swing traders, we can trade momentum markets if we place our orders within the right part of this cycle. Sounds complicated, but all it really means is buy pullbacks in momentum markets. You buy a pullback in a momentum market, a strong momentum market, that's when the momentum is phasing downward, ready for the next price thrust, if you've done your homework. As we go through the next couple of hours, you'll find that I'm not going to keep adding new things on top of new things on top of new things. We're going to start to apply some of this stuff, so I don't want, if some of these concepts are new to you, I don't want you to get discouraged. Please don't get discouraged, because we're almost done with the basics. We want to start to look at how to apply some of these things and how they could bring us opportunity and how we could separate ourselves from the crowd. Okay, let's flip. We can pass on that. Let's go. Flip. I'm sorry. Convergence, divergence. Market polarity. Markets move between two states constantly. Usually there's a plus side, a negative side, and then that's zero in the middle, flat point. Perfect example, bull market, bear market, sideways market. It works in many different ways. This is convergence and divergence. Convergence is when different aspects point in the same, different price and indicators point in the same direction. Classic convergence. Classic divergence is when an indicator points one way, price points the other way. Very often, there is no convergence or divergence, really. It's in a flat middle where it's not telling you whether one's supporting the other. Convergence-divergence is not only between indicators and price. It exists within many ways within the market. When price pulls back to a trend line, price is diverging against that trend line. Trend line's pointing up, price is dropping into it. It's a divergence. What does that tell you? That tells you that all convergence-divergence tells you that if a divergence exists, at some point, they've got to come into sync with each other. They have to converge. They have to both point in the same direction at some point. Okay, let's flip. Oh, we'll pass on this, okay. Next. Contraction, expansion, another form of polarity. My favorite kind, and a lot of folks, some folks use it every day and some folks can't get the hang of it. Contraction, expansion has to do with the nature of price volatility, how price will expand out of boundaries, form a new range, a lot of volume, a lot of volatility, starts to quiet down. You guys and me, we start to turn away because nothing's happening. And at that very point where absolutely nothing's happening, the stock explodes into a new expansion move. This is really very similar to a concept which is I call the trend range axis. Stocks are either in trends or they're in ranges. The market oscillates back and forth between trends and ranges in all time frames. One of your needs with 3D charting is to know what's going on, whether you have a trend or a range, in the different time frames you're working with and trying to coordinate them into a single package so that you can make a trade properly. You know, it's real neat if you have a trend in the time, you know, in your time frame, you go, oh, I have a nice trend. But on the next time frame above, it's moving to the top of a range. The stock breaks out, hits the range, and dies. Because there's a time frame precedence. Longer time frames take precedence over shorter time frames. And you get caught in this thing where you have this perfect looking chart, but you step right into a range that messes you up. Contraction is a point where indicators fail. Right at this point, this last red bar right here, the last red bar, one there, and one there, if you took a look at your technical indicators, you want to know where do technical indicators lie? Well, they're lying to you right at those points because they're saying absolutely nothing. They're saying nothing's happening. At that point, the pattern has all the information and the technical indicators are offering you nothing. Now, there is classic studies on this. You talk about the futures market, Tony Crable. Day trading the short-term price patterns. Did very extensive studies on the S&P 500 using what's called NR7 bars. The narrowest range day of the last, narrowest range bar of the last seven bars. It's very easy to put in a scan. Very easy to use your eyes and see it. I believe that that the last red one and the first one's narrowing seven. The last red one of the third one is NR7. Odds start to increase of a sharp price expansion when an NR7 comes. Now, markets sort of don't sit perfectly on this. Sometimes it's an NR6 or an NR8. But in the cyclicity, the cycle nature of the market, when volatility drops, the only thing that can replace a loss of volatility is volatility itself. The only thing that can happen when there's no volatility is volatility. When markets come to neutral points and their activity drops down, volume drops down, price change drops down, that's the point you need to pay attention. That's where opportunity is for you. And another classic form for this is right at the top of a range. Watch price move up to the top of an ascending triangle or into the top of a parallel price channel, and rather than pull back, it just sits there, and the bars get smaller and smaller and smaller, and it sits right on that resistance point. Tremendous low-risk opportunity. Tremendous low risk opportunity. Because if price rolls over and breaks that bar, you know you're wrong very quickly. If price pierces that resistance point, it should expand sharply. One of the mechanics in the market is its tendency to expand sharply away from support resistance barriers when broken. And so your opportunity lies in finding these support resistance barriers and trying to get into the market, not after you see that time and sales ticker go crazy, not after you see a big volume spike or two or three big volume spikes on your daily charts at night, but to get into that market when nobody else is interested in it. When everything tightens up, everything stops, everybody else turns away, you could sit there, enter a position, you could sell it short because nobody's trying to sell it short. You could get in without slippage long because nobody's trying to buy it long. You sit there and wait. If you're wrong, you're going to find out you're wrong in a quarter point, a half a point, a point. You're not going to find out you're wrong in 5 points or 10 points or 15 points. So it's going to be one of the key concepts we talk about. Let's go ahead and take a break, and we'll get back again. Just about 10 minutes, and then we'll take some questions before we begin.